It's Sunday afternoon, and welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby, and our genius producer and engineers, Jack Inslee and Nat Wiener, are responsible for that cheesy but awesome intro music.
I have to say I really loved it.
By Mariah Carey. Beautiful. Our sponsor today on Cutting the Curd is Edwards Ham. And the number for call-ins, should anyone have any burning questions about cheese, is 718-497-2128. So today's show is totally random in a way and all about mongers, cheesemongers in particular, and random in that my original guest was unable to make it at the last minute, but I walked into Roberta's and found not one, not two, but three qualified cheesemongers. Ooh. In addition to my friend Katrina, who said that she was going to initially be out here. So I'm going to start off by saying, you know, what is a monger? I got this question a lot when I was in the process of opening the store, and people were like, are you sure you want to call your store cheesemongers? Like, that kind of sounds gross or weird or whatever. And I was like, you know what? I like it.
I like it too. It makes me think of Shrek a little bit somehow. Shrek. Some sort of like ogress, yeah, beast.
Kind of ogress, maybe like a couple like boils here or there, but like nothing like, you know, that you can't handle.
They have treatments for things like that.
Yeah. But so the traditional dictionary definition for a monger is a seller or a dealer. And while there are mostly kind of negative connotations with mongers, you know, we have warmongers and fearmongers, you know, fishmonger and cheesemonger, we got like the positive side of the spectrum. And, you know, I totally love the word. And we do like to think of ourselves as dealers a little bit, you know, it's like the first taste of cheese, it's like, it's free and then you're hooked.
We get you, we're pushers.
Totally. So today on our show, I am joined by Aisha Girdle.
Hello.
Hello. Who is, cheesemonger for Formaggio Essex, which is, located in the Essex Street Market right near Saxelby Cheese. And Brooke Little, who is her, are you her, like the skipper to her captain?
Yes, I'm a left-hand lady. I'm a yes lady to Aisha.
Awesome. And then we also have Katrina Vahedi, who is joining us.
Hello.
Hello. From, she's on sabbatical from California. She works at the pasta shop in Berkeley. And they also have a location in Oakland. And then finally by Aaron Tevlin, who is a current cheesemonger at Formaggio Kitchen in Cambridge.
Hello.
So thank you guys all for coming out and being on the radio. This is awesome.
Yeah, it's great. Thanks, Ann.
So maybe can we just like go round table for a second? How did you all come to be mongers? It's like kind of, you know, a ridiculous job description to end up with.
My family, this is my family's business. So it's sort of, I was born into it in a certain way. So it was something that inevitably was put into my life. And I feel really lucky in a lot of ways that it was something that I learned through my upbringing and was really just constantly shown throughout my whole entire upbringing. And I was always shown new things throughout just the things that my family brought into their stores. And it's really, when we talk about cheesemongering, I immediately think about community. And it's a figure. And I know we'll probably talk about this a little bit more as we discuss this, but that's initially what I think about.
And Formaggio Kitchen is like such an institution. I mean, how old is the original store now?
31 years.
That is awesome.
Yeah,
your parents, Isan and Valerie, were just like such pioneers and really like, you know, kind of promoting this awesome stuff, cheese kind of principally, you know, but so many other things before anybody really even knew what was up. So that's awesome. Did you always like think that you would end up in the family business, or?
You know, I think I always knew that it would have a role in my life. And I, you know, I don't know if this will be always what I do, but I know it will always be something that I will play a role in and will always play a role in whatever I do. It will always, be something that I will definitely be a part of.
Sure. So, yeah. Like you said, it kind of like shaped your childhood.
And vice versa. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's played a huge role in my life. So.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And how about you, Brooke? How'd you fall into the cheese pot?
Well, I really kind of stumbled into it. I was actually going to school in California, studying architecture at California College of the Arts and Crafts. And I got a summer job. I got a part-time job as a cheesemonger at the pasta shop where Katrina and I met, actually.
Whoa.
We go way back.
The world is so small. I love it.
It is. And especially for ladies being cheesemongers.
I love that this is a room full of lady mongers.
There's a lot of ladies in here. Yeah. It's pretty nice. I kind of did that part-time and graduated and realized very quickly that there was more work in cheese than there was in architecture.
Awesome. So. Although you are manufacturing architectural creations to age cheeses in at the store.
Yes, I have cheese aging apartments in the refrigerator. Being in Manhattan, we have to be very careful with our space. So, I've been dinking around with a little affinage. It's fun. It's interesting. I see a lot of parallels in design and process and how things come to be, which I think, for me at least, is kind of what gets the gears going, is looking at what people are doing, how they're doing it, looking at packaging especially. And for us, in the market dealing especially with international cheeses, there's a lot of interest and a lot of time spent looking at how to preserve these items best possible. So for me, that's kind of, you know, where I get the design stuff from, which is fun.
That's super fascinating. Yeah. And something that I have to say on my end of things, you know, working with just American cheesemakers,
yeah,
you know, people don't get quite as much. It's like, hey, is there like a cardboard box around? Like, hey, I'm going to throw a bunch of cheese in it with like, you know, one ice pack and some newspaper and like cross my fingers.
Does it
you
fit
know?
In my pocket?
And I'm like, dang, you know?
No, it's
so maybe
it's
you
great.
Could like, you know, have a future designing cheese infrastructure for American cheesemakers.
I know, like a pop-up box you can purchase, you know, and take it home, learn about aging cheese.
Totally.
Yeah, yeah. No, so I don't know. It's fun. I think, like I just said, the community is really interesting to me. And I think that, you know, we're doing a lot to preserve these artisanal methods in like food production and cheese making, which need to be protected, especially in the United States and bringing cheeses in from abroad.
Totally. Well, how about you, Miss Katrina? How'd you end up being a monger?
Also totally by accident, I fell into the pasta shop around the same time that Aisha and Brooke fell in, I think. And for me, I didn't really know anything about cheese coming into it. I didn't know very much about specialty foods. And it was kind of this period of awakening and learning more about food and cooking my own food. I was very young and just starting to do these things on my own. And it was like this new dimension of flavor that I could add to, not just to a meal, but like this new dimension on the plate. It's like a new spectrum, like a new food group. And it was just a big part of that whole growth experience for me, and a really, really lucky one.
Cool.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about the pasta shop? What other things you guys sell when it got started?
Well, obviously pasta.
Okay.
The store.
Really?
And shops. Yeah.
The business as it is now was bought from a couple in 87. And they started out mostly with fresh pasta, sauces, a few house-made items, and now we've got a really large kitchen and prepared foods as well as fresh pasta, fresh ravioli that are made for us and also sold wholesale at some other markets. Specialty cheese, of course, we have 100+ different kinds of cheese at any given time.
Wow.
Oils, vinegars, preserves, drinks, you name it. If it's really good, we try to get it in the shop.
Cool.
Yeah, fun place.
Oh. There are no... Do you sell wolf meat?
It got really wild in here all of a sudden.
Every now and then we have wolf.
Yeah.
Wolf ravioli.
Only during Christmas.
Keep an ear out.
Yeah.
Only when the moon comes out.
In the hills of California.
You gotta watch out.
Yeah. I guess if they ate like possum and raccoon in the south, why not? You know?
Why not?
It's the new.
It's coyote in California. It's coyote, not wolf.
Yeah. So. Oh, sorry. Coyote. Well, and what about you, Erin? How did you get to be a monger?
Well, ever since I started working, I've been totally involved in food. And when I was, I think, 21, Isan called me and asked me to come to work for Fromaggio Kitchen. And I saw it as a great learning opportunity for myself. So I've always loved food. And
what was your first job?
Dishwashing.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Everybody's got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
Mine was ice cream. You know, I have a soft serve.
I also was an ice cream scooper, an ice cream monger.
Okay, really?
Nice.
I didn't know they had those.
Nice. That's
right. So yeah, I've been working at Fromagerie Kitchen for 5 years now. So
wow.
It's been a real learning experience for me.
That's amazing. I mean, it's amazing in a small business like that. Like Aisha was saying, it is kind of all about community and what you can learn, not just about the food you're selling, but about the people, you know, that make the food, the people that come in and shop there, and the people you work with. So,
yeah, Fromagerie Kitchen is a great, great, like, educational center. Brooke and I were talking about that last night. It's a place where you come to learn, you know, the business about cheese, everything.
Yeah. And then I feel like Fromagio has like launched so many people into like different careers. Like I think about Matt Rubiner, who owns Rubiner's Cheesemongers mm-hmm. in Great Barrington. He worked at Fromagio. Mm-hmm. Michael Lee, who now owns Twig Farm up in Cornwall, yeah. Vermont. He worked at Fromagio. So that's pretty awesome. That's like to be able to have a business that really fosters that, you know, kind of learning. And that allows people to go off and do their own thing. It's like just furthering the appreciation of this, of all this cheese.
Yeah, it's a great education. And I think because they focus so much on artisanal cheeses and small production cheeses and then products that accompany, you get to learn the basics of those products.
Yeah.
And once you kind of get that foundation, it's easier for you to understand how other things are made and why they're made the way they are. And, you know, it's all about storytelling and...
Yeah,
I'm sure cheesemongers love to spin tales.
It's true.
Yeah,
it is so much about storytelling. And well, so speaking of storytelling, I actually my original idea for this episode was, I mean, I know that I've had some ridiculous and hilarious situations selling cheese to people over the year.
Here we go.
And I wanted to do a kind of like best of like the ridiculous stories, because I feel like every person who works in retail or customer service has inevitably just come across some weird shit.
Yeah. Just in the least.
Yeah.
So I was just thinking, you know, maybe we could like go around and talk about like, I don't know, funniest customers,
most awkward
customers, people's habits that you notice that come up again and again. I mean, you become a bit of an anthropologist,
yeah.
as a cheesemonger, because you can start to anticipate and read people. So I guess I don't know. I'll just start off with a random story, and then you guys can totally take it wherever you want. But back when I was working at Murray's in the West Village, there were a couple of call-in customers that were like completely high maintenance, and like I became the designated monger to deal with these people when they would call on the phone. And one woman lived out in the middle of nowhere in Kansas or something like that. And every time she called, she would kind of state her case. I think she was like a veteran of some sort and, you know, was just kind of, you know, I don't think she communicated with the outside world that much outside of calling Murray's. But yeah. She would have us send her the most ridiculous stuff. We would send her cheese. We would send her bread, which we would like wrap up to the best of our ability, like in wonky saran wrap, and send out to Kansas. And oh, one time she actually called and asked for us to send her a pizza from John's Pizza
to go get it,
which was down the street on Bleecker Street. And I was just like, I have to draw the line. I was like, we cannot send you that pizza.
If we don't sell it.
I probably, yeah. I know, right? I would have given it a go. Get some dry ice. Don't know.
You're so much more enterprising than me. I was just like, no way. And then there was this other guy named, I shouldn't say his name, but I remember it. So, you know, his name was John Doe. And even though this was like 5 years ago, it's hysterical that it sticks in my mind. But he would call the store, and it actually turns out that that he was housebound. I found this out later because I saw his name in a New York Times article about people who like live in their apartments kind of permanently and have helpers that like, you know, go out and kind of do their errands and stuff.
Wait, was he like a shut-in, or did he have like medical issues?
I think he had medical issues. Yeah,
it's like a Howard Hughes kind of thing.
And so, but he would call, and he was a poet. And so he would like talk to me about what cheeses he wanted his guy to pick up. And then he would always read me a poem on the phone.
Oh, romantic.
Would he give you his order in verse?
Yeah. He didn't give me his order in verse,
iambic
usually.
Iambic pentameter?
Yeah.
That's great.
Maybe he's, like, worked on that, you know, in subsequent years. but I just thought those two for me were kind of, you know, unforgettable. And so I wonder if you guys have any, like, or if anything that you notice working behind the counter that people do that you're just like, I can't believe people do that.
One thing that drives us bananas at the store are sample people that just come in.
Yeah, the meal eaters, people.
We,
really.
Formaggio Kitchen Incorporated, meaning all three of our stores have always been, we always love to sample things just to, you know, just to, so you can come in and sort of sample our products and sort of freely come in. But Formaggio Essex has a couple
devoted fans.
I have a feeling Aisha's samplers gonna be very kind that here. Devoted samplers.
We know who they are. We know who you are if you're listening.
You're on a list, by the way.
There are photographs.
We love you still. Yeah. And we'll always have those samples out there for you that come out, and we'll always just come in to grab the samples.
And are we talking like one or two, or are we talking like whole plate?
It's not a try.
No. But you know, they don't want to talk to us. We want to talk to you, but they don't want to. We're like, can we help you?
Borderline
harassment
sometimes.
They're like, no. They come in, they grab the samples and they leave. And I know Formaggio Kitchen suffers from this too. And
they pour the samples right into their hands.
I've heard stories from Formaggio Kitchen where sometimes Formaggio Kitchen will put out whole Robbiolas, which are almost like 3/4 of a pound, beautiful, soft, ripened cheeses. They've had customers walk out with whole pieces, and my brothers had to chase people down into the street.
We had a guy that would cut pieces, like chunks of cheese, and put them into coffee cups
and leave.
And walk out.
I mean, these people take it to a whole nother level. So more recently, I think this woman has actually even come to the Saxelby's counter, and I know Benoit and I've had kind of laughing matches about this woman, and I had to chase her into the sidewalk and tell her never to come back. She came in with two layers of gloves on. First layer was, Brooke can help me tell this story.
We have to talk about her hair.
We have. This lady was out of control.
I want the nitty gritty.
Like, okay, so
she's a tiny woman. She's like 4.5 feet tall, and everything she wears is far too big for her. This is the kind of person, right?
Okay.
Nothing fits for this woman. Uh-huh. And she has this purple thinning hair, which from a distance looks like a wig, and it's poofed out a good like 7 or 8 inches forward and then combed back, like a Donald Trump situation.
Okay.
Bigger and purple.
Out of control.
Like Ronald McDonald?
Yes.
Teased.
Yes.
Teased.
Okay. Right.
Like she hasn't
almost
washed
with
it
as
in
much makeup.
Maybe 2 years.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah, it's bad. She looks homeless a little bit. She might be. I don't know. I'm not judging, but she might be. But she comes in with two
newspapers from 1975 in the bag.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Mm. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
Good articles, I'm assuming. If you came around that much.
I want to know what she's reading.
I know. So you know? She has these gloves. The strangest part. Oh, this is the part that really gets Aisha, too.
She has latex gloves on the first layer, and then she has gardening gloves on the second layer.
With the fingers cut off.
She comes to the sample counter, takes them off.
The gardening gloves,
the
not
gardening
the plastic
gloves.
Ones.
And she starts asking me about, do you have raw milk cheeses? I said, well, we have quite a few. And I start, you know, giving her samples, saying, this is what we have. No, that's not going to work. How much is that per pound? And, you know, I helped her. I turned my back for 1 minute.
That's all it
I
takes.
I had a camembert that was a slowly thermalized cheese, so it had been slowly cooked. Uh-huh. And all of a sudden, she swiped it off the counter, shoved the whole thing in her mouth. I looked up and I saw cheese goop coming out of her mouth. And there was a regular customer in our store who looked horrified. Horrified.
Oh, no.
Like, eyes just going
she was so
out
disturbed.
Of her face, like looked like she was going to throw up. And the woman was leaving. I said, ma'am, because she had been describing to me how she had health problems, was not able to eat cooked cheese. I said, that's cooked. Are you going to be okay? And she goes, I'm fine. She's like spewing cheese out of her mouth and leaves. And my other customer said to me, I was like, are you okay? And she goes, I just got over this fear of goopy things. And
sampling and eating samples.
And that just freaked me out. I said, I'll be right back. I chase the lady out into the sidewalk. I was like, you can never come back into my store. She goes, I understand. And kept walking.
Oh, she knew what she did was wrong. That
she knew she crossed the line.
Big time. Oh, I felt so bad for that other customer. It had taken her years to get over that fear of sampling and like gooey cheeses. And in one fell swoop, this woman ruined it for her.
You know, bar nuts and cheese samples. Well, listen, unfortunately, we have to take a really, really quick break, okay, like 30 seconds. But when we come back, I know everyone else was chomping at the bit with more crazy cheese
endless
stories.
Really. Oh, yeah.
The mongers will return.
You can have me when you want me. You simply ask me to be there. And you're the only one who makes me come running. What you got is far beyond compare.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Anne Saxelby, and I am joined today by four wonderful, talented, lovely lady cheesemongers, Aisha Girdle, Brooke Little, Katrina Vahedi, and Aaron Tevlin. And we are going to be joined by a man for this segment.
A man?
Who I think is on the phone right now.
Lock up your daughters.
Yeah. Robert, are you with us?
I am. Hey. Hey, ladies. How are you?
Hi, hey, Robert. So Robert, this is really fun. I feel like this is like the Formaggio, you know, this is the Formaggio centric hour.
Yeah. It is. Yeah.
It's awesome. And so we were just kind of all telling our most ridiculous mongering stories because we said, you know, as cheesemongers, we're kind of storytellers, we're kind of anthropologists, like, you know, dealing with all these people who come in that have different experiences and different likes and dislikes. And so do you want to weigh in? Do you have any?
Weigh in, that was pretty good.
Oh, thanks. I didn't even mean that.
Well done, Anne.
Thank you.
Good job. I definitely do. And for the most part, I think we can come up with some of the wacky, you know, customer stories like Aisha just explained, which there are numerous of them. And we could go on and on for hours about them. But some of the most hilarious things have to do with the fun that customers bring to the environment, because at times I feel like behind the counter you get pretty serious about your cheeses and you tend to be very protective of them and you try to expose them in the best possible light and try to tell everybody where they're from. But once in a while you'll get just a random witty customer or two who just make you smile and make you remember, you know what, this is food and we're supposed to have fun with it too. Two instances, one of which happens to be with working the counter at Formaggio Kitchen in Cambridge. And it's a very busy Saturday, and all of a sudden, out of, you know, we're all helping customers, you just hear a voice say, do you have any Pont l'Evêque? And I turn around, and we all turn around, and you can't see the person who said it, because our cheese wall is about 6 feet, 7 feet tall. So you peek around the corner, and there's a child about 8 or 9 years old, a boy, who just yells from behind the counter, do you have any Pont l'Evêque? Like he's been to Normandy and he's experienced it. He's had it with apple cider.
Only in Cambridge.
And you have to look at him and say, you know what? I sure do. And he's like, well, can I please taste it? Of course. I'm thinking the whole time, this kid is putting me on. He's just having a good time. But then you give him a taste and he turns to his mother, who's around the corner, and says, Mother, I would like to buy this Pont l'Evêque. She says, okay, go ahead and get it. Like, wow, that was amazing.
That's
like, just
great.
Random.
I didn't know what Pont l'Evêque was until I was, like, 24.
Yeah.
I'm so jealous of
like,
that
wow,
kid.
This kid is kid worldly. Knows. Like, that's fun. The other one is just, I think we've all experienced the cheesy puns that customers come up with when they walk in the door trying to zing you.
Oh, sure. Yeah. My friend Mark, who used to work at Murray's, used to call himself the Punisher. Because that was like what he would do behind the counter all day, would just like come up with cheese puns.
One of the best that I ever heard was when I was in Rhode Island, a professor at URI at in Rhode Island, walked in the door and said to myself and my counterpart who was there, just started, you know, sending a whole bunch of cheese puns our way. We're all starting to laugh, but he said, "There's one that I want to give to you, and I think the whole world needs to know about it, and we need to put this on T-shirts and on bumper stickers." The phrase was, "What would cheeses do?"
Oh, that's really good.
All of us were like, "Oh my God, that is perfect. We do. We all need to like grab that and put that onto a bumper sticker because that's the best thing I've ever heard."
Or remake like those little rubber bracelets.
Get the bracelets involved.
With
yeah,
like WWCD.
Yeah, Live Strong. What would Jesus do? You know?
Yeah, yeah. I like that.
I could get into that.
We could start selling them at the Essex Market, guys.
Let's
isn't
do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
let's do it.
Yeah, we just need someone to make them.
Totally. Yeah. All right.
It should be fairly easy.
They have totally kits. Okay.
They have kits?
Yeah, they have kits that you can make those rubber bracelets with.
Oh my God.
They're for children, but I'm sure you could use them.
If so is Pont-l'Evêque, apparently.
If, yeah. And if children can operate them, hopefully, you know, we can also do it.
Yeah. I don't probably know. Have a hard time, yeah.
Yeah, totally. That is hysterical. Well, what about you, Katrina? Do you have any zingers, any crazy stories?
Well, one of my favorite phenomenons at the cheese counter is either the date where one person knows a lot about cheese or thinks they know a lot about cheese and they're trying to impress their date.
I'm so glad you brought this up. The couple.
The couple's And sometimes it's not a date. Sometimes it's just like a daughter or a friend who knows a lot about fancy foods and they're trying to impress their friends. And sometimes it has a really positive spin and it's, "Oh, you have to taste this. This is amazing. This is made by three monks on a mountain." And sometimes it's takes a more negative slant and it's, "Oh, this one is crap. This is crap. This is other crap. That one is good." And that's an interesting phenomenon for me. I find it really amusing either way.
What about the couples that come to the counter and like, have you guys ever had the experience where there's like the whisper, like you give them a taste of cheese and then they don't tell you like outwardly if they both like it or not, but they step back and whisper to each other.
Yeah, that always makes me nervous.
I know.
Yeah.
And you're just like on trial. You're standing there. You're like, "Oh God, did they like it? Do they not like it?"
No, and one of the best examples of that too with the couples is when they both step back after tasting, look at each other and say the exact opposite thing to each other.
Oh, that is really good. I was
and
just
it's awkward for a few seconds. You're like, "Oh, I'm going to just get the next cheese to try.
Let's taste something else."
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, I love that moment where one person tries something and they're looking at the other one and the other one tries it and they keep looking back and forth, but no one wants to say anything.
Right.
Yeah. They're waiting for the other person's reaction.
I often gauge like the potential success of a relationship off of a cheese purchase. Because I'm like, "Dude, if this is this hard, it's just not going to work."
It's not.
My father actually once stopped dating someone because they did not like goat cheese.
Wow.
It wasn't just the goat cheese. It was, you know, she was a really conservative eater. She ate like, you know, chicken and rice frequently, plain, no salt. And this was just a symptom of a bigger issue that he couldn't deal with it.
But yeah. Absolutely.
That was the breaking point.
Well, we have two minutes left, and I don't know, another thing that I was thinking about, and maybe this isn't as fun as the couples thing, but what about cell phones?
No,
I mean,
good.
Cell phones at the counter.
I will not help you.
No bueno.
No, people often come. So at the Essex Street Market, we have a little stall that's kind of separated from the pathways that people walk around on. And people will come into our shop and use it like a phone booth because it's a little quieter and it's kind of out of the way, you know. Uh-huh. They'll just be in there rapping on and on about something. And you're just, I mean, they don't want to be helped. They're not looking for anything. They're just trying to get away from it all. And it just drives me up the wall. I cannot handle it.
They don't realize that they're standing there facing you talking.
Yeah.
But that
I know. Yeah. It's absolutely stunning to me. And yeah, people will do. I mean, I think anyone who works in retail has suffered from this, where they're on their phone, they're talking to you, they're talking to someone else. And I just have a zero tolerance policy across the board. If you're on your phone, I'll wait. That's fine. But I'm not going to try to interject whatsoever.
Yeah. I feel like there's an expectation for you to be paying attention to them immediately while they're on their cell phone too. It's like, "Why aren't you looking at me while I'm talking to somebody else on my cell phone?"
Like, what? The entitlement, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know about you guys, but I get all self-conscious when I'm on my cell phone in public places. I'm like, I don't want anyone to know my business. I'm trying to hide.
Right.
I know.
Especially with the things we talk about. I don't want anyone to know about these things. Yeah. On a Sunday morning. I don't want anyone to hear these conversations.
I feel so rude.
I know.
Totally. The other day at the store, this girl came in and she was on her cell phone, and apparently she had just come back from a job interview that had not gone well.
Oh, no.
And so she was like, whatever. She's like, so-and-so shouldn't have even sent me on the interview if they, you know, knew that I had like, whatever, 2 years of experience and they were looking for six. And this other woman standing, you know, behind her in line, she finishes up, she pays, she leaves. And she's like, I wouldn't care for that job. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so it's just like, yeah. You never know who's listening.
Right. I feel like you invite people into your conversation a little bit if you're talking like that. I will jump in. I'll be like, that's right. He shouldn't have said those things to you. You were right to leave.
Tell him.
Yeah, exactly.
Make this a roundtable discussion.
I know. Totally. Right? I think we could devote an entire show just to overheard conversations on cell phones.
Oh, that would be brilliant.
The cheese counter.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, thank you, ladies, so much. And Robert, too.
Thanks, Robert.
For being on the show today. And I think this was really fun, and we should do it again.
Thanks again.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Thank you. Thanks, Anne. Yeah. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you,
Anne. Robert.
All right.
Bye, Robert.
Thank you, guys.
And we'll see everybody next week at 2:30 on Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network.